Red, did you kill Norm Evans?
No, I didn't.
Were you there?
Yes, I was.
You are in the maximum security section still of the Walla Walla Penitentiary, correct?
At present time, yes.
I want to back up a little bit, several years, in fact, a number of years, and begin, we'll call it 11 years ago or so, and just lay the picture out for us, who you were, where you were from, how you ended up in Chelan that day, and just begin unfolding the story in your mind as you remember.
Well, I lived in Arizona, worked in Alaska for my aunt's construction company and other relatives, you know. I received a phone call in Alaska in the first part of 81. It was January, February, I believe it was. And the man asked me if he could help, if I could help him out with a problem. And I said, sure. You know, relate the problem to me. And he ran it down to me and said that he was having problems with Mr. Evans, whom I'd like to add that I've never met in my life. Never even saw the man. And I said, yeah, you know, it could be arranged. And I was into drugs real heavy back then. Cocaine, Quaaludes, smoked marijuana occasionally. And I told him, you know, the arrangements would have to be made, not right then, but later, and that I would get back in contact with him, which I myself never did. But as I left Alaska, which was last part of February, or the first part of March of 81, I went to Arizona, and when I reached Arizona, I was asked by a family member if I still was going to do that, and could I get somebody to take care of the problem. And the problem was they wanted Mr. Evans shot, because what they had told me at the time was that he was beating Helen up and threatening to hurt her real bad if she didn't sell her stuff to pay off Mr. Evans' back taxes and to get him out of debt, because I understand that he was substantially in debt with the IRS on his taxes. But I told him, yeah, it could be arranged. And when you hang around the crowd of people that I did back then, things like that was easy to come across somebody that would do it for hardly anything. So I was out partying one night with some friends, and we were at a bar, and a friend of mine that I'd like to keep his name out of it, you know, I was talking to him about it, and he says, well, this guy here, you know, and he pointed at somebody down the end of the bar. He says, he lives in our neighborhood. He had, you know, we grew up around him and stuff, and he was older than me. He said, he talked about being into stuff like that. So a friend of mine called him over, and we started talking about the conversation, and I asked him, I says, you want to do a contract? And he said, sure. What's the price? And I told him, $5,000. Is what the people want to give you. And he said, sure, no problem at all. When do you want to leave? And it was basically right then, you know. There was no hesitation at all. We made arrangements. There was another friend at the bar. He was the one that I borrowed 357 from. The guy dealt in stolen guns. And he had a... He rides motorcycles, but he had a car that night, his wife's car, and he gave me the keys to it, told me, he says, go out in the trunk and just pick one. I go out to the trunk of the car, and there's multiple weapons of different calibers, and I just picked up one and a box of shells to go with it, and it just happened to be the only one in the whole car that was legally registered. The rest of them were all stolen guns. That's what, you know, that was his sideline, dealing in stolen armory. And I didn't think none of it. I threw it under the seat of my truck and called up the family member that was directly involved in this, which was my grandmother. And I told her, I said, I've got some money and we're ready to go. I said, we need money for traveling. She said, I'll meet you. And she met me at a gas station up on the freeway. And told my girlfriend, I said, I'd be out of town for a couple of days. I don't know how long, but, you know, I told her that I was going to Nebraska or someplace like that. I really don't remember. Because I didn't want her knowing and didn't want her involved in what was going on. And my whole intentions of my part was just to bring the guy up here. And,
was your grandma involved in this?
Yes, she was.
How?
She was directly involved. It was between her, Helen, and Mark Marchand.
And so you were given by your grandma traveling money?
Yeah, she gave me $700 bills. Told me that's all she had at the time, but if I needed more to call, and she would Western Union it to me. And at the time, I felt that would be plenty.
This sounds like it's all matter of fact to you, like this is a course of business, and that's the way things were, and that's the people you ran with all the time then. Would not be uncommon to talk about a contract?
At that age, and the people I hung around with, yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I've seen it happen in several different occasions, you know. And yeah, it really wasn't nothing that was out of the ordinary for the type of people that I did associate with back then, the criminal elements, as they call them. But,
heavy duty into drugs?
Very. Myself, yeah. I had never freebased coke, but I had met a man that, out of Alaska, that had did a contract killing up there, come down with a briefcase full of money, you know, and he said, buy us some coke and I'll show you some new stuff, and he introduced me into freebasing, not smoking crack, but it's, you know, it's a different form of smoking cocaine. And back to the original story, you know, not to get sidelined, but we jumped in the truck, and, you know, after I went to my house and I packed a few things, we stopped by his house, and he grabbed a shotgun out of his parents' house, suitcase, with a few things, bedrolls. We got on the freeway and came to Washington. On the way up here, I had problems with my truck. The truck wasn't no piece of garbage. It wasn't. It was a rebuilt. You know, the guy I bought it from, he rebuilt it from the ground up. It had a brand new 351 Cleveland motor in it. Everything was perfect in it. The only thing that was wrong with it was the man had forgot to put transmission fluid in it. And partway up here, someplace in Bend, Oregon, the transmission was acting real funny, and just a few miles outside out of the town there, the truck just locked up the back tires and skidded to the side of the road. And I had managed to get it in a lower gear, the only gear that was left in it, and got it into town and parked it on the side of a residential area road next to a junkyard, which that junkyard didn't cover, you know, didn't have the transmission I needed, so I had to go all the way from Bend, Oregon to Burns, Oregon to get a transmission. We took a bus, took the transmission, which was cracked completely in half, brought the transmission back, put it in, and got a little further and started having spindle problems, which is the thing that the tires are connected to. It had big mud and snow type tires on it for desert. You know, it was a desert truck. It was out of Arizona. And so I had to stop and get that fixed. And, it was just wobbling so bad. The tires were out of alignment and stuff that it had cracked the spoked wheels that was on it, you know, a woody type spoke wheels.
Right.
So I had to stop and get those welded, and it was just someplace right over here on the other side of the Oregon-Washington border. And got that all fixed, and as soon as we got into Wenatchee, the bearings went out again. So I had to get another new spindle and bearings and fix it. And the truck was progressively getting worse, the front end part was. And We got up in here about the April the 6th, and the first night we were in town, we checked into the Red Apple Motel, and the second night also. And the whole time we was here, I kept calling Phoenix to my grandmother. My grandmother would get back on the phone and call up here, you know, in a confirming what the word to use here would be, communication of us being here and when and where and all was a basic communication between my grandmother and my aunt.
Well, let's back up a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, at one time or another in this whole process, there was talks about bringing up some sort of piece of heavy equipment.
There was a piece of heavy equipment at one time that was headed this way that I was supposed to bring up. But that was not a true statement. That was the only part that I've lied about. I did not bring no heavy equipment up here. You know, it was a little ditch-witch backhoe that...
You originally told someone that you would be bringing it up from Arizona to...
Yeah, and I was going to. You know, we had one down there. But this was supposed to be a in-and-out type thing, and nobody was supposed to know that we were coming up or anything. So we didn't bring it.
Your traveling companion, you have said you didn't know him, don't know who he is.
When I met him, his name, you know, he was introduced to me as Commander, and I found out that his name is Dave Eyes. How you spell the last name, I've never figured out. Mr. Mathena has. And I think it's E-I-S, or E-I-E, however. I really do not know how to spell his last name, but his name is Dave Eyes.
How long did it take you to get from Phoenix to Chelan?
Quite a while, because I was the only one that could drive the truck, because it didn't have a stick shift. You know, it was a three-speed transmission, but I did not have a stick shift in it. I just had the rods that, you know, that you shift mm-hmm. the transmission with. I just had them laying inside up on the floor. And he couldn't comprehend how I could even drive like that, you know, but my mechanical background and, you know, being around mechanical things all my life, it was easy for me, you know. Plus, it was a guarantee that nobody would steal my truck, because he probably couldn't figure out how to get in gear. But I drove most of the way, you know, and we could only drive 55, 60 miles an hour, because I didn't want to attract attention. I didn't want to take any chances on wrecking the truck any worse than I had when I first originally bought it. I had a brake problem with it, and the day I bought it, I started it up and took it around the block and ran into a car, and that's how it smashed the fender and everything. So I just took the hood off and laid it in the back of the truck. I mean, you know, down in Arizona, it's not unusual to see trucks running around without hoods and stuff on, because it's an easier way to keep them cooled off when you're running through the desert and everything.
All this time that you were driving up, did you get to know this Commander Dave better?
No, believe it or not, we really didn't talk much, because he was a very quiet individual. That's how I learned his name, driving up. You know, I says, man, what's your name besides Commander? I don't know what to call you, you know. And he said, my name's Dave, you know. So that's how I knew his first name. And then later on, I don't know how it came about, but he said, my last name is Ives. You know, it's not spelled E-Y-E-S or anything like that. He spelt it to me, but I didn't really remember, because, like I said, I was into drugs very heavy then, and he drank a lot.
So you both were...
He was an ex-FBI employee out of Phoenix. He worked in the FBI records department.
What?
He was an FBI employee in Arizona. He worked in the records department. So he knew how to cover his tracks, like Mr. Mathena has told me. He said they've never been able to get any pictures of him. He's never had a driver's license. He's never had high school photographs taken. He's, you know, it was always one of those things that he was up on, you know, as far as not being there when the pitcher sessions were taking place or something, or never been fingerprinted as far as I know.
Okay, you on the other hand came to Chelan, checked in at a motel.
The Red Apple Motel. Yes.
Left your name, made phone calls that were of record, did things that would readily put you here. Why?
Because I wasn't going to be here. I was going to just drop him off and leave. I was headed back to Arizona, you know, and he was going to stay in and do it at a later date. And the guy didn't know the area. Well, neither did I, you know.
How many times have you been here before? Had you been here before?
Once. I had been through Chelan one time, Manson area one time, back right after Helen had divorced Mike Flem, which is the man that actually bought that land and started putting the trailer court in. You know, it was an apple orchard back then or something. And they were married together and adopted a little Athabascan Indian boy together.
Johnny,
yeah. Little Johnny, the one she sent in to find the body when she knew he was laying in there dead.
How did it happen then that you ended up staying here and, in essence, leaving enough information to ultimately find you instead of just dropping Commander off?
Well, he really didn't have second thoughts about it. He just said, man, I need help finding all the areas and stuff and a good way to get out of here, you know. And we had called one night, I believe it was on the 8th, and my grandmother said, my grandmother had a trailer house that sat in the trailer park, and she said instead of spending the money staying at the hotel, she said, go stay at the trailer. She said, Helen, set it up so there's food and stuff in there for you. There's no furniture or anything, but you guys got your sleeping bags, so just go stay in the trailer house. So we went into the trailer park, and this is when Helen first knew that I came up here. Drove through the trailer park, and she recognized me in the truck. And she got on the phone immediately and called my grandmother and raised hell about it. You know, why am I up here? You know, why is he being involved in this and all that? And my grandmother told her, he doesn't plan on staying. He's just going to drop the guy off. Well, Helen had said for us to just drop him off at the trailer house and for me to leave. She didn't want me in the area when it took place. And she had left, you know, she had made the comment, just do it there at the trailer house. You know, try and talk him into coming up and turning on the heater in the trailer house and do it in there. And the guy went down. He took the 357 down to the trailer that Norm and Helen was living in. And Mr. Evans was very suspicious, I guess, because he wouldn't even come outside. He said he would take care of it in the morning. You know, and so Commander had come back to the trailer and says, man, the guy's real paranoid. He wouldn't even come out of the trailer house. So he says, well, I'm just going to go up there and just, when he answers the door, I'm just going to shoot him right there. You know, he says, I'll just go up and ask him for some tools to fix it myself with. So he went up and knocked on the door, and Norm wouldn't even open the door. He knelt down below the window seal and looked out suspiciously at the guy and said, well, can I just borrow some tools and I'll try and get it turned on myself because it was cold. And he said, just a second, let me get my wife to come and talk to you. Now, see, my understanding was, before we even left, that he had had a man named Crazy Larry from Wenatchee of Crazy Larry's mobile home or sales or service, something like that. There was something mentioned about paying him $500 to come by and shoot at her with a shotgun and scare her. See, so in my eyes, It was, the man was trying to hurt one of my family members. This is how it was put to me in the beginning. I didn't know any different, you know? And that's one thing I grew up around, that you don't let people hurt your family members, you know? And, I mean, it was, the thing was so crazy. My grandmother wanted to come up and shoot the guy for beating her up. He said he'd beat, you know, that she told me that Norm Evans was beating my aunt up and all that stuff. You know, I don't know if any of that is true. I don't believe it is. You know, if it is, it was just a greedy situation where who killed who first? You know, I honestly believe that. It was who got who first for their money. You know, she was worth obviously more than him. Her trailer park and all everything else. The ranch was all hers. The trailer park was all hers. You know, she started it all from ground up. I'm not real sure where the property for the ranch came up, but I think it was from Mike Flynn. That's why I wanted to talk to Mike Flynn before I did this interview, to ask him them questions, you know, because my impression and understanding was that, yeah, you know, everything that she had was hers, and Norm Evans had his own property separate, you know, something to do with the trailer courts and the boat marina and all that stuff. And she'd wanted it done so bad, so, you know, sooner, because she wanted full control of that boat marina also. You know, but he had ended up selling it to the two boys, Mark and Mitch, which made her real mad, and she would keep on him constantly to go back and get that boat marina back from them, because they weren't keeping up on the payments or anything. And I guess she herself had gone down there and told the boys that they were going to take control back over it because they weren't paying the payments up on it, and she couldn't afford just to give them free gratis. You know, that's what kind of a greedy lady she is. Cold-hearted, greedy lady.
What then happened after Commander's failed attempt to murder Norm at Lakeview Trailer Court on what would have been the 8th, 9th, whatever?
The night of the 8th?
8th.
We had called my grandmother the morning of the 9th, and she said that...
Called from where? Where'd you call from?
From Manson, some kind of a recreation center or something. I can't remember. It's either a red or a green building. It's a very big building, just as you pull into Manson.
Okay.
And there's a phone booth right there on the outside, and I just went to the phone booth there and called my grandmother from there, collect. And she said, my grandmother told me that she had just talked to Helen, and Helen said that they were going out to the ranch. Now, I didn't know nothing about the ranch at this time. You know, she said, you can find it. She said, You can't miss it. Just go, it's up by the rodeo grounds. Find out where the rodeo grounds is and drive around up in there, and you can't miss it, because there'll be one of the trucks sitting out there that your dad used to have, meaning my father. Norm Evans had made a deal with my dad to let him, you know, he had a trucking business back then, my father did, and Norm Evans had given my dad four or five trucks. They were white cab over Kenworths. And on the side of them, it said Evans Construction. So I recognized the truck immediately after I found, you know, I went to the service station and asked the guy, I said, where's the rodeo grounds? You know, well, I was at the service station working on my truck, retightening the bearings and stuff and having them adjust the brakes on the truck and stuff. Asked him where the rodeo grounds were, and he told me, you know, the general direction. So I drove up there and... actually drove right to the place. You know, I saw the truck sitting off in the distance with a flatbed with hay on it, and I knew that was the place because she had told me it was a... My grandmother had told me, you know, described a little bit of it, said there was a fifth wheel trailer sitting out there and the basement block wall built up. She said, go out there, and she said, on Friday night, Norm Evans will go in and use the bathroom inside of the basement, which is operational, you know, because they had a sewage tank septic tank, all that stuff put in already, and the bathroom, you know, it had all the plumbing was in working order. And my aunt said that he would go out there around 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, take a shower or whatever. So,
why at this point were you still there? Why, just for direction purposes?
Yeah.
Didn't you sense you're getting sucked into something?
Yeah, at that point, you know, I knew that I was definitely sucked into it, and I couldn't walk away at that point, you know? I mean, I had plans of helping the guy steal a car so that he had transportation and a way out of there. You know, after showing him, you know, after the failed attempt at the trailer court, and after showing him the rodeo grounds, the only reason that I was real interested in going up the rodeo grounds in the first place was to see the horse, which was the stud that I had a colt from, you know, down in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And it belonged to me and my wife, my girlfriend. The only reason we got married was so that she couldn't testify against me, and to make sure that nothing happened to her, because if there was even a slightest doubt of her having to testify against me, I was afraid that they would do something to her, which, you know, they didn't come right out and verbally say it, but I just been around these people long enough to know that that's the way they operate.
Let's back up again, just a couple days, or it's sometime in that period. You and Commander Dave were stopped by a state patrol officer here. You remember that?
Yes, I do. It was on the night of the 6th or the 7th. It was either the night we rolled into town or the very next night. We was going to go out and see the trailer park because, like I said, I'd only been there one time, and I wasn't even really sure where it was at, just that it was on the way to Manson, out in Manson area. You know, and this was all had to been told to me by my grandmother to refresh my memory, because when I'd come through here, little Johnny was like only 3 or 4 years old, so I wasn't very much older myself. I think I was only 16, 17 at the time. And really didn't remember. So we drove out that way just to check it out, and Officer Shillings pulled me over, and on the way back, going back into Chelan from Manson. It wasn't on the way out. I guess he had seen us driving out towards Manson and then pulled me over coming back. But he had stated that in the trial that there was no tailgate on my truck, which there definitely was, you know, and if I hadn't known that, I'd have had the guy I bought the truck from come up and testify on my behalf. The fact there was a tailgate on that truck, and bring the receipts, because he bought the truck from, you know, the tailgate and parts that he'd put on the truck out of a salvage yard.
What good would have that done? Just discredit the testimony?
Yeah, to discredit, you know, their testimony that going downhill, that the stuff bounced out of the back of that truck.
Okay, we'll get back to that in a minute, or that's still a bit ahead of us.
Yeah, it is.
okay, so you have your... you know the location that you're going to in Union Valley. You had been told that to do the deal on Friday night, when Norm came out of the house to use the bathroom or whatever in the unfinished basement, which was probably, what, 100 feet away, I would guess, from the trailer.
No, I don't even believe it was really that far. I mean, from the area of the bathroom to the trailer house, it was probably approximately that. But the trailer house only sat like 25, 30 feet from the open garage door itself, set up on a little knoll up there.
Okay. Nonetheless, everybody, I think, had been led to believe that you went to the water tower area early in the morning, hiked over, did the deal, and or were there, hiked back. That's not the case.
No, it's not. We went up there, you know, I went the day of the 9th. We drove up and... looked the place over. I went up and I was going to ride the horse. So I went inside the place to find a bridle and stuff, you know, because nobody was expected to come up there until the next day or the day after. And I wanted to ride the horse. Not that I'm into horses or nothing, but, you know, he was a good-looking horse. And I think that's when I climbed through the window, even though the garage door was open. You know, it was about two feet up. The windows weren't locked. And I think that is when I originally climbed through the window where they had found my fingerprints. But we surveyed the place and checked it out and looked for alternative routes of leaving out of there for him, because still at this time, I had planned on leaving the area and being someplace else, you know, so that I would not be implicated. And we went back into Chelan.
Did you ride the horse?
No, because I couldn't find a bridle. Everything was locked up, and I didn't want to make the place look like, you know, it'd been broken into or anything. So I didn't ride the horse. We went back to the truck. I parked the truck right there, you know, in the property. And we drove out of there, went back into Chelan, and went to the bar that night. And I had bought some marijuana from somebody. There was a, I had called my grandmother and told her the bearings are going out on my truck again, and I don't think I would make it out of there. And she told me, well, Norm Evans had a junkyard, and, you know, explained to me where it was there in Chelan. And I went to the junkyard there, and there was a truck identical to mine that's set up by one of the trailer houses in the trailer court that he owned up there. And I didn't want to take the chance of going up, you know, and stripping all the parts off this truck just to fix mine. So that's when I was at the service station, retightened up all the bearings again, and drove on into Wenatchee and got the parts that I needed, put a new spindle and everything on, had the tires balanced, and we went to a couple bars in Wenatchee and had a bunch of drinks, and I bought some Quaaludes. And we had left and went back to Chelan that night and stayed in the trailer house again one more night. We'd stayed in there the night of the 8th and 9th.
So you're staying in the trailer court fairly close to your ultimate victim.
Yeah, it wasn't no more than 50 yards.
And you still claim that you never saw or met Norm?
No, I saw him from a distance. The 8th, on the 8th, he was there working inside of the, I guess they, it was a store or something that he was building on the trailer court grounds there. I saw him and a couple other guys, you know, and working in and out of this place. The guy wanted to go shoot him right there, and I told him, not until I'm out of the area. You know, I said, if you want to hurt the guy, that's fine. The original thing was that he was only going to hurt him in a scaring situation, but it turned out that he actually did kill him.
No, wait a second. Your grandma had contracted someone to hurt him, but not to kill him.
That's why he was shot in the arm, in the shoulder. And the guy just went all the way and finished shooting him. You know, whether he had lost it or whatever. But Helen wanted him dead.
And your grandmother didn't?
She really wouldn't say. She just said, shoot the bastard, was her words. You know, I didn't know what he looked like or anything, so I explained that to my aunt. I mean, to my grandmother. My grandmother called my aunt. My aunt sent a photograph down. I don't know if it was express mail or not, because it was like I had it the day, you know, the next day or the day after. Said, here's the latest picture she's got, had taken of him. And it was a picture of him in a tuxedo at some bar party, you know. And I had shown it to Dave, you know, Commander, so he knew what the man looked like. And that was the only picture or anything I've ever seen of Mr. Evans.
How much of this is new information that you haven't talked about to anybody in the press or detectives?
Quite a bit.
How come you're doing it?
Because I'm not out for revenge, but I've been really disturbed by the fact that she did lie to me in the first place, because I don't feel that she was getting beat up, threatened to sell her place. All she had to do was get an annulment. And what really has bothered me the most is after this whole thing, she had gotten remarried to another man, and he got killed down in Texas. You know, somebody walked up and shot him in the back of the head with a little caliber 25 semi-automatic pistol. And they had promised me this and promised me that, you know, and...
Like what? What kind of promises?
That I wouldn't go to jail. That, they would take care of things. They would get me a good attorney. Then they said, well, you know, if you do get convicted, you'll only be there 13 years and we'll appeal it and get you out before that. And not to worry that we'll get you a house and everything, you know, new car and stuff like that, money and, you know, material things. And
those mattered then and don't now?
No, they don't. I don't want nothing from them. You know, I don't even want to see them.
Get back.
The only time I want to see them is if there's a trial, another trial, you know, and somebody else is convicted on this thing. I've done my time for my part in this crime. I was only an accessory. I should have only done 9 years, and it's over 9 now.
Let's go back to Friday.
Okay.
Tell me about what you did on Friday afternoon, evening, whatever it was.
Okay, well, like I said, we went up there on the 8th, and or the 9th, drove around, and we had went up to the water tank area, you know, and how I found the water tank area was just behind the ranch, there was a road that led up over the mountain there. So I drove that road in my truck, and it came to a dead end, and with a little barbed wire fence around the top of at the end of the road. But I could see the water tank, so I knew there must have been another road to get to the water tank. That's when we drove out and drove up the other road, coming up to the place. You know, it kind of splits off into a Y. One road goes to the ranch area, and the other one goes up to the water tank area, and that's how the officer ultimately made the mistake, took the wrong road, and ended up to where they had found the fence busted open and the evidence, which they said was laying by the fence, which wasn't. It was all, he kicked it out, Dave kicked it out up at the water tower because the pistol was in the suitcase, and he was afraid of getting shot on the way back to Arizona, you know. He was afraid that he did one, and to make sure that nothing came back to me, that he probably thought that I was going to do something to him, you know?
And that was the weapon that had your fingerprints on it?
Did it have my fingerprints on it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it did. Yeah, because that was mine. You know, it was for me. I carry, you know, I used to carry a gun everywhere I went.
Sure. Okay. What time did you get to the... You scoped out the area. Had you figured out a way to leave? Did you go as far as going down the road that you ultimately used, Henderson Road?
You lost me on Henderson Road.
Okay. It would have been the road that you used to get out to the Schland-Manson Highway. Did you go that far when you first went to the area of the water tower to kind of scope out an escape route, if you will?
No, when we went to the water tower, I had noticed the road that led off back into like a little gully that went back in towards the hills, back up towards the Manson area. And I didn't even think nothing of it. But I'll get to that as soon as I tell you about
right. The
night and everything.
Go ahead.
We drove up to the fence. There was a padlock on it. I took a hammer and busted the lock off, and by this time I knew I was committed into staying there and seeing this thing through. you know, because the guy was just, I don't know, I didn't feel right and comfortable with his actions, I guess.
So you consciously knew that you were committed?
Yeah, at that point. At that point, I really did. And so we drove up to the water tower. You know, after I closed the gate, I wrapped the chain around the fence like it was still padlocked shut. And we drove up to the water tower and parked behind the water tower so that if anybody drove up there, they would not see the truck. And we had walked over the mountains. There was, you know, like two or three mountains to get there. And walked down, sat on top of the mountain for a long time, waiting to see if anybody was around. And when nobody, you know, when we saw that nobody was around, we decided to go on down around the area. And I think we stayed down there for about an hour, hour and a half, then walked back up to the side of the hill to wait for somebody to show up. Because when we had went down to the ranch area, at that point, he had looked through one window that looked straight into the bathroom and said that, you know, he could shoot him right from there. And that's why the window was open. And
so he went around and opened that window?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how the window was ultimately left open, because when I had went through it to try and find a bridle to ride the horse, he knew that the window could be opened. You know, and it wasn't that far of a distance from the window to the door of the bathroom. So he had left the window open. And I had noticed there was already a fire lit in the fireplace. So I said, you know, they must be here, must have been here, and they will be back. I said, let's go up to the side of the mountain and wait. So we went up and sat on the side of the mountain for a while, and that's when we saw Norm Evans' van pull in. And then we saw a pickup truck. I think it was a white Chevy pickup truck pull in, and my aunt and little nephew got out, or little cousin got out. And Norm had backed his van up to the building, and they just went into the trailer house, and so me and Dave got on down closer to the ranch area. Well, you know, on the way down, Norm had come out, so we stopped and stayed where we were. By this time, it was getting, you know, a little dark, so he couldn't see us. And he had went in and threw a couple of logs on the fire, and that was it, and went right back into the trailer. He didn't stay out there, you know. I guess he was just warming up the inside of the place so that he could work in there the next day. But he went inside the trailer, so we decided to go down and just hang around there. So we sat outside for a while, and it was very cold. And I said, man, we might as well go on inside, you know, so because if he comes out, we'll be able to hear him open the door, the garage door, to get in. So we went inside, and we hadn't brought any bedrolls with us. But on top of the Chevy Camino, whatever it was sitting there, there was a bedroll draped across the hood of the car. So we took the bedroll and laid it out in front of the fireplace. And it, by this time, it was way after 10:30, 11 o'clock. So I'd figured that, you know, they had, all the lights went off in the trailer. So I figured, you know, they were asleep for the night. And that's where we stayed until the morning time, which was about 6:30, 7 o'clock maybe, at the very latest. I had woke up and heard the trailer door shut. So I took off down towards the end of the building and threw the bedroll, you know, back over the hood of the car so it didn't look out of place. Snuck back down behind the fireplace, and there was a trailer, you know, a little utility trailer inside of the garage, and a little cabinet towards the back of the garage in the very corner where he had ultimately been shot. And Dave had stepped around to the back of the trailer and waited for him there. And I looked underneath to see which direction he was taking, coming through the garage door. And when I saw that he was headed directly towards the back of the trailer where Dave was, I froze where I was, and I heard the first shot. The first thing I heard was Norm say, "What the hell?" And then the shot. And it seemed like, you know, I can't say, but it wasn't a long time. You know, I mean, you know how these things are. When your adrenaline is flowing and things, and you're hungover from drugs and stuff. But it seemed like it took a long time, and then I heard another shot, and then another shot. And that's when I heard Mr. Evans hit the floor twice. He had hit the floor twice because he was getting back up. And that's why the third shot was fired.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't. But I heard him hit the floor up against... I heard the ladder rattle. I don't know if he hit the floor or just fell up against it, you know, was pushed back by the shotgun blast, because the man wasn't that far away from the end of the shotgun. Maybe 10 feet, if that. And
so other than his feet, you didn't see him then either?
No, sir. I did not. You know, all I saw was I turned around and I saw Dave starting to run out the back. And I turned and I saw Helen's face at the corner of the garage door, and she turned around and walked off. And we headed towards the open window at the far end of the thing and jumped out the window there because I didn't want to take the chance of going out the open garage door and having little Johnny see me. You know, even though I was wearing a beanie with all my hair tucked up underneath of it. We jumped out the window and started running up the hill.
Did you see Johnny?
No, actually, at one point I did, and that was just as we got up to this little like road part that, you know, that I was speaking about up on top, that drove up into a dead end road.
Mm-hmm.
Climbing up the side of that little mountain, I slipped, and I turned around to look, and that's when I guess Johnny headed over that way, and. Helen had told him to come back. And they just climbed in the truck.
Did you hear Helen say that?
Yeah, I heard her tell him to come back. And she said something to the effect of, just leave them alone, they're just bird hunters or something. You know, they're just hunting or something. I don't really remember what she had said. But we kept running. And Dave had asthma or something real bad. He just, you know, he couldn't run very far without stopping to breathe and having a hard time breathing. And I kept telling him, either come on or I'm going to leave you here. You know, I'm not staying here. You know, obviously the cops are going to be coming real soon. But then I saw her climb in the truck and just drive away, up, not towards Chelan, but, you know, back into the mountains. I guess is the area where she went to show the little Johnny the goat or something that she wanted to buy for him. And by this time we'd gotten to halfway to the truck, and there was a pile of rubbish sitting on the side of the just off the side of the road, about 5-10 feet maybe, not even that far I guess, but you know, just an approximate. And I told him, I said. Let's get rid of the shotgun here. Let's not carry it and take it with us. So I dug a trench with the heel of my boot, and he had laid it, you know, he'd wiped it all off, all of the fingerprints all off of it, and laid it in the little trench that was made by the heel of my boot, and brushed some dirt back over the top of it, threw some grass on it. And we made it to the little fence, jumped the little fence, and got to the truck. And out of my peripheral vision, that's when I saw him kick the suitcase out of the truck, but I didn't think nothing of it at the time, because I was more intent on grabbing the box of shotgun shells that was in the truck, and I heaved him over the back of the hill, over the water tower, you know, I was my truck was parked between the water tower and a hill, and I heaved the box of shells as far as I could back over the top of the hill, and climbed in the truck, started it, and we took off. And I didn't, you know, it didn't register that he had kicked that suitcase out. I mean, you know, subconsciously, I knew he had kicked something out, but I didn't know what it was. So, anyway, we had drove out of there, got to the fence and found that, you know, I didn't even know that it was padlocked. I just drove up to it and hit it with the truck. That's when I realized that it had been re-padlocked. But it flew open easy enough, you know. I didn't lose control or anything like that of my truck. I just kept going. At that point, we'd gotten down to almost the bottom, and I remembered the road that cut off the other way, and I said, you know, to him, I said, I'm not going to take that other road back into town that we've come up here on, because that seems to be the only way up here that, you know, if the cops are coming, they'll come right through there. So I took this other road that took us back in towards Manson area, and, you know, that's when I noticed him taking the towel off the window, throwed it out, and took the jacket that he was wearing, the orange jacket that was found. He took it off and threw it out. We drove down into a little thing that was like an apple orchard, past it, and it right out into a road that was pavement, into a residential area. Got on the road that we'd been on before, you know, that I had recognized, that took us back in towards, you know, it was halfway between Manson and Chelan. Jumped on that road and drove back into Chelan and took the bridge and went on into halfway in between there and Wenatchee. We stopped at a little store and got something to drink and something to eat, because we hadn't had nothing to eat all that night, you know, and that morning. I got a thing of chocolate milk and a thing of donuts, and I think he got a couple of beers. And we got in the truck and went on out. But what had happened, see, was I didn't go and take the whole road. I went to cut across the little terrain to get to the road, and there was a ditch there. And the battery, you know, the post that holds the battery down?
Yeah.
It had fell out, and the battery fell down inside and cracked. The battery, and battery acid was going all over the spark plugs and stuff, and it kept missing and cutting out and stuff, and I couldn't figure out what was wrong, you know, because I couldn't see the battery, obviously. So when we stopped at the store to get something to drink and eat, that's when I noticed the battery was all messed up. So I picked it up and put it back in the little carrying thing and hooked the stuff all over the, you know, all over the back of the top of the battery to hold it in place, and I had a little spongy tie-down cord, you know what I'm speaking of?
Yeah, bungee cord.
Bungee cord, and fastened it down so it wouldn't fall back out. And jumped in the truck, tried to start it, and it wouldn't start. It was, you know, because all the battery acid was gone out of it, and so we had to push start the truck. And got it started and just was on the road to wherever, you know, out of there. We was in Wenatchee. And I saw the road that said Portland. I jumped on that and headed straight to Portland. And I stopped just this side of the border someplace in Washington still. And I made a phone call. It was 12 o'clock noon. Told my grandmother, I said, I need some money. I said, it's taken care of. She says, I know they've got the dogs out looking for you. She said, just get out of there. And I said, well, I'm far, far away. Send me some money. I'll make it to Portland. Send me a plane ticket to Portland, because my truck won't make it no further. And she said, fine. That was, you know, that was the plan. And so we sat there and waited. I think she sent me $150, $200, something like that, to Portland, Western Union. So we had to wait. You know, not Portland, but I think it may have been Dalles. Is that Washington? Right at the border there?
Vancouver, Washington?
No, it wasn't in Vancouver. It was, you know, what is it, I-5 that goes all the way up through there?
Yeah.
Okay, it wasn't that crossing into Oregon. It was just a little bridge back this way, probably 50 miles or so. I'm not real sure because I still don't know Washington. You know, I'm not interested in it because I won't never stay here or be here again if I ever get out of here. But we got the money order. I went to the parts store and I bought some spark plug wires because the battery acid to date them out. Put on the spark plug wires and didn't worry about the battery because I knew I'd just be trashed in the truck anyway, you know. And knowing a Ford vehicle, they can run off the alternator and generator, whatever you have in it, you know, without needing a battery once you get it push started. So after I got the wires on it, we push started it and drove on into Portland and went to straight to the plane airport and called her up, and she said she didn't have the money for plane tickets, but that she could put bus tickets on her charge card for us to go to the bus station, and she would get the bus tickets there ASAP. So we went on into Portland and to the bus stop, found it, and I drove around the blocks a few times looking for a place to park, and I had found an empty parking spot that was, you know, about two or three blocks away, maybe a little more, maybe, you know, I don't really remember, but it wasn't very far from the bus stop. And pulled in there, and it was like back in the corner. Pulled in there and shut the truck off and went to get the suitcases and the bedrolls, and the suitcase wasn't there. And that's when he had told me, he said he kicked it out up at the water tower because he was in too big of a hurry getting in the truck and it was in the way. And that was on my mind all the way back to Phoenix on the bus. And we got back to Phoenix.
Did you guys talk about that? Did you talk with him about that?
No, didn't say a word.
Did you know that the items in there would point at you?
No, I didn't even think about it, to be honest with you. I was scared, real scared, you know? I mean, first time I'd ever been involved in killing somebody. You know, or actually shooting him. I didn't know that he was dead. You know, and my grandmother hadn't told me that he did die. She just said, you know, that they were looking for us with the dogs to get out of there. You know, and that's basically all that was said on the phone. And so when we got into Phoenix, into Glendale, which is a suburb of Phoenix, she picked us up at the bus stop. And she said, yeah, you did a good job. He's gone. And she said, let's go to the house so you guys take a shower and clean up and everything. Because we were pretty filthy. I hadn't taken a shower for a couple of days being out there at the ranch. You know, and being on the bus all the way back to Phoenix. So we went home, took a shower and everything, and she said, I'll come pick you guys up tomorrow and pay you guys. So she came pick us up, we drove to the bank, and she handed me the envelope and asked for the $700 back that she had originally given us to travel up here on, because that was out of her own pocket. And I looked at Dave in the back seat, which was sitting next to my little cousin Mikey, and he shook his head, yeah, go ahead. So I gave her $700 back and handed him the rest of it. And she dropped us off at my dad's house. And he, as soon as we got out of the car, he counted out half of what was left. He said, here. He said, man, since you were there, you get, you know, he says, you get half of it, you get, you know. We split this in half, the whole thing, all the way down the middle. You know, and he had said something that was like, if we got caught, or anything like that, you know, it was a 50-50 deal type stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But, he took the money, and,
You didn't take any?
At that time, yeah, I did.
Okay.
I think it was about $1,500. You know, maybe a little more. And, is all I took. I told him to take the rest. And, he left, and that was the last time I saw him. But hearing from Detective Messina, Mike Mathuna, the one that is retired, he said that Dave had gone to the bar with, you know, big wad of $100 bills in his pocket, bragging and stuff to his ex-girlfriend, or, you know, I don't know if she was his girlfriend at the time or ex-girlfriend, but bragging to people that he was a contract, you know, that he was a hitman doing contract killing for the mafia and stuff like that. And I had spoke to him on the phone, and I told, it was right after they had arrested the guy that I got the pistol from. They arrested him and took his fingerprints and stuff, and he had an alibi, but they told him, you know, not to leave because he would be subpoenaed to testify if there was a trial. So the guy contacts me and tells me, hey, man, you know, everything that happened, this was like a couple weeks after the homicide. He told me, he said, man, you owe me for that pistol. So I said, yeah, no problem. And I told him that I would meet him over at the friend's house who I bought the truck from, which the truck was registered to my girlfriend at the time. I don't have anything that's registered to me. I've always kept it that way in my life. Why, I just don't know. But met him over there, and Dave was there. And I told Dave, I said, yeah, well, you know, I ain't giving this guy the whole $400. I said, you're the one that kicked it out of the truck, so he handed me $200. And I gave him the other $200, and the guy went out that night and got drunk. You know, he was married. Picked up, this was the guy I got the gun from. Picked up the barmaid, instead of going home to his wife, he